This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Welcome to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast, brought to you by ESPN Plus, the home of UFC 260, the exclusive home of UFC 260. I'm Jake Litarski, joined today by John Littering. If you're out there on Twitter, give John a follow at JonLitterine. You can give me a follow at RotoJake. Today we're going to be making our picks for the biggest fights at UFC 260, Francis Ngannou versus Stipe Miocic. Some other quick housekeeping here. New sports betting section on RotoWire. We give you four or five legal sports books to kind of compare and shop around your odds here, and all sorts of props, sortable. We'll be referring to some of that later on. I mean, some of it helps for DFS when we're sorting by likelihood of a first round finish or odds to finish in general. So all that stuff applies to DFS too, whether you're a handicapper or not. And then of course, Fight IQ is going to be back on the RotoWire YouTube channel at 8 Eastern time on Friday night. Going to be talking about the same thing. They're going to talk about whatever's left of this card here because, John, this has been absolute chaos here. Today's been a rough day. It was already kind of a short card to start with, and we haven't even gotten to weigh-ins yet. So let me quick summarize here. Apparently, Shane Young withdrew from the Omar Morales fight, but an interview the other day, Shane Young said he's actually in. So that fight's still a little bit in limbo. William Knight had to withdraw, and he got put on a later card. So Alonzo Menifield's now fighting a newcomer in Fabio Chirant. And then, of course, Jessica Penne and Hannah Goldie. That fight has, there was a positive COVID test somewhere in there, or a protocol thing, and that got moved back to April 17th. Of course, we already lost Volkanovski and Ortega after Volkanovski apparently tested positive. That's going to get moved back, you know, I'd imagine at least a month or two now, as long as he's not too symptomatic. I mean, what do we make of this, John? It's like, and we still got to get through weigh-ins.
Yeah, I think we kind of make it might not be the best idea to start running full arenas of 16,000 people next month. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that looks like where we're heading. So
yeah. Usman, Masvidal in Jacksonville, I think they're going to do.
Yeah.
And, like, if you remember the first time the UFC kind of came back, they went to that arena in Jacksonville. So I think Dana's got a bill coming due here. He's got to give them an event pretty soon. And he's been pretty stubborn. He says he's going to be the first. So I guess no matter what the cost, they're going to roll it out there.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked about all the cancellations and reschedules we're getting now. And, you know, that's with whatever we're at, you know, the limit. I mean, obviously Apex or whatever, you know, really, you know, no fans really. But, yeah, we're good. This is not going away. I mean, as far as forget like a world view and a health pandemic view, as far as just, you know, scheduling fights and rescheduling fights, this isn't going away. And it's not going to, until everybody gets vaccinated, you know, we're going to have, this is something that's going to have to be dealt with. It just is what it is.
I wonder where I trade blood with other people in a cage falls on the vaccine priority list here. Like how many fighters are getting it and what that whole process is. I mean, it comes down to state, I suppose. So it could be a while yet, but I mean, Jacksonville, and then I imagine Texas is coming up. I know Dana wants to do Texas because they've kind of loosened up some of the mandates there. So, you know, the days of the quiet listening to the leg kicks crack might be coming to an end here because we'll have screaming fans pretty soon.
Yeah, and then even, I mean, and then when you take in the vaccinations, you know, you're talking about all pro sports and, you know, it's going to be – beyond that, it's a personal choice. Mm-hmm. You know, I had COVID a couple months ago now, and I was actually due to get the vaccine for my job because I'm an essential worker, and I got COVID right before I was going to get the vaccine, so now I can't get it for 3 months or whatever. And, you know, every single person's situation is different. Some people don't want to get it for whatever reason, and, you know, it really fights and sports are a small part of the world, but if that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's what we talk about here, and it's going to lead to cancellations and rescheduling, and that's mm-hmm. just where we're at.
Well, let's go ahead and move on to the fights that we do have here, and hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, because if we lose any more of these main or co-main event fights, this card's going to be, you know, fight night quality at best here. But we do have an exceptional heavyweight championship fight. I mean, whenever you get to determine the baddest man on the planet, that's oftentimes enough to carry a card as is. We've got Stipe Miocic coming back. He's going to take on Francis Ngannou. This is a rematch of a 2018 fight in which Ngannou lost. Stipe was able to outlast him, take some power shots, control him on the mat for a large part of the fight, and eventually sweep the scorecards here to get a judge's decision. But despite that outcome, Ngannou here enters as the betting favorite, about minus 120, where the comeback on Stipe is plus 100. DraftKings salaries reflect that accordingly. 8,400 for Ngannou, 7,800 for Miocic. Odds to finish, I mean, it'll move a little bit, but right now I'm looking at minus 435. So quite a good chance that, at least Vegas thinks that this fight won't need to have the judges involved here. I guess what were your initial reactions to this, and do you see the outcome being any different this time around?
Well, we just mentioned the depth of this card is not good, but you know, there's nothing wrong with this one. This is a, you know, main event that could headline any show all year. This is, you know, the fact you talked about the salaries and Stipe's 7,800, and as far as Vegas goes, he's plus 100 about in the odds, essentially even money. The fact he is that close to Ngannou, it just tells you how great Stipe is, because Ngannou looks like an unstoppable force. And if you put him in the octagon against any other heavyweight, Ngannou's salary is going to be pushing the high eights or the low nines easily. But the greatness of Stipe is the one thing that's keeping this thing close. And these two guys fought back in January 2018. Stipe won the fight. He's fought three times since then. Every single one of them was against Daniel Cormier, which is crazy. He hasn't fought anybody since the first fight other than Cormier. Stipe's a big power puncher. Obviously, he can't match Francis in that area, but he does have legitimate power. But without a doubt, Stipe's two greatest attributes are his durability and his athleticism. He's far more athletic than your average heavyweight, and he's exceptionally durable. He took shots from Ngannou in the first fight, shots that put most anybody else Ngannou hit out cold. So Stipe's proven he can take a punch, and essentially we're at the point where anybody who fights Ngannou is going to have to be able to take a punch, because he just – I mean, the power – he's the most terrifying fighter in the sport. I don't think that's debatable. I think with Khabib Nurmagomedov retired, I certainly think Ngannou's power is the biggest difference maker in the sport today. You know, Khabib's wrestling was certainly up there when he was around, but I think Ngannou's power is definitely the biggest attribute in the sport today. And, you know, Stipe, I mentioned the athleticism. His footwork is good. He moves his feet much more than your average heavyweight. He gets in and out, and that's going to be a necessity in a fight like this. I'm going to pick Ngannou. I picked him the first time. I obviously got that one wrong. I'm going to go back to the well again. I will say I think Stipe is going to have an edge. If this fight sees a fourth or fifth round, I definitely think that's going to favor Stipe. Ngannou's cardio has gotten a little bit better, but if this fight sees a championship rounds, Stipe should have a considerable edge. It's just there. I just have a hard time getting past. This feels like the, for me at least, it feels like the coronation of Ngannou. Mm-hmm. Now,
I think that's how the UFC is probably setting it up too, or at least that's what you might expect to happen.
You know, I think, you know, you talked about the heavyweight title is, you know, the prize of prizes, you know, not just in MMA. You know, you talk about the glory years of boxing, you know, the heavyweight championship, you know, is what you fight for. And Ngannou, right after he lost to Miocic the first time, he had that really weird fight against Derek Lewis, mm-hmm. where Lewis's back was all messed up, so he couldn't do anything. Ngannou looked baffled and disinterested. The whole thing was strange.
Yeah, it's like he was hesitant.
The whole thing was weird. But since then, he's 4-0 with four knockouts. Jair Rosenstruck, Junior Dos Santos, Cain Velasquez, and Curtis Blaydes. Obviously, two of those guys aren't in the UFC anymore. But, you know, at the time he fought those guys, that's top mm-hmm. tier. That's,
yeah, ranked,
you know,
guys for sure.
Yeah, that's top of the top. Mm-hmm. And it's just the unique ability where Ngannou can land glancing blows. Doesn't even have to catch guys flush. He could seem like he's barely grazing them, and guys just go out cold. Mm-hmm. And Francis has put a considerable effort into becoming a better all-around fighter. He's a massive man, obviously. He's in terrific shape. His wrestling and his grappling has gotten better. It's never going to be his strength, certainly never on par with his power, but it's certainly gotten better. And he defends the takedown at 71%, which is about an average number. That's a fair number. It's not great. It's not horrendous. He gave up 6 takedowns to Stipe in the first fight, and that can't happen again. You know, if he's going to give it, you told me right now he'll give up 1 or 2, I'd probably sign off on that and say he's probably going to win. I don't think he can give up 6, but Ngannou's power is the equalizer, but that power is not going to help him if he's fighting off of his back. Mm-hmm. So as long as he gets to keep this standing, he has an advantage over Stipe and anybody else he fights. And I think the other important thing is, I think the smaller cage at the apex has to be brought up here. Mm-hmm. It's not as wide, and if that favors anybody, it should favor Ngannou more than any man in the company, because mm-hmm. that gives his opponent less time to back up against the cage and more time for him, you know, him throw bombs without his opponent being able to get out of the way. So, like I said, I picked Ngannou the first time, got burned. Going back to the well, I don't think there's a huge gap between the two. I would say both the salaries and Vegas odds are about right. And I think Stipe is experienced enough and crafty enough that I wouldn't be shocked if he won this. But I think, like you mentioned, and I think the UFC is kind of viewing this as Ngannou's crowning moment, and I think I kind of agree. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, wow, that was pretty much the most complete breakdown I could have asked here. I don't have a ton more to add. I guess I got a couple notes before I'll make my pick. One, you mentioned Ngannou's 4-fight win streak. Those fights have combined to be under 3 minutes total in all 4 of those fights. So he's putting away people, and he's putting away people early. It's not really too surprising to see he has the best odds of anybody on the card for a first round stoppage at plus 250. That's quite the number here. Normally you only see that from, you know, the giant -400-500 favorites with a lot of power. So that's something there that bodes well for his DraftKings status here. You know, a lot of handicappers will say, you know, don't get too married to one outcome. Think, for example, if Ngannou doesn't get the first round finish, then how does this fight go? It becomes a lot more even, and that's why we have, you know, the odds a little bit close. But John, in the end, I'm with you here. I have to go Ngannou. I think he gets an early stoppage here. I think Ngannou could pretty much, you know, as long as he doesn't, you know, let something, he can pretty much run in there and charge and throw his shots, and as long as he doesn't get taken down in that immediately, you know, that's the one risk of going with that strategy. You know, like you said, he can just glance you and really, really wobble you, and he shouldn't be afraid to continue to throw combinations, because that's pretty much how these fights have gone. He's blitzed, he landed his shots, and he's put away his opponents. And the other thing that stands out for me is, you know, Ngannou's 34. Now, granted, heavyweights, their prime tends to be a little bit later than most weight classes here. Stipe is 38, and, you know, the 2 years ago, anything's going to change for Stipe in those is 2 years. You know, he's not necessarily getting – you generally don't get faster, and you generally don't get more durable as you age here. So Stipe coming up on 40 while Ngannou is right in his prime. that makes me think that that this is Ngannou's fight through and through. Like you said, Stipe's only fought DC three times since the last Ngannou fight, so I don't know what kind of power he tastes in sparring day in and day out, but like you said, no man can really replicate what how hard Francis Ngannou hits. So, you know, for those reasons, I think that Francis Ngannou can put him away this time. It'll be a changing of the guard moment, and I don't see another heavyweight on this roster that can really beat Ngannou or contend with Ngannou. Maybe they do a trilogy fight. Maybe they try to bring Bones in there to contend a little bit. But otherwise, the third best actual heavyweight on the roster is Curtis Blaydes, in my opinion. And Ngannou has already dismantled him twice here. So this is Ngannou's fight, and I think it's a big moment for him on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, I think the UFC is certainly hoping that probably that Ngannou wins this fight, and somehow they can just book Ngannou and Jones and just make a boatload of them, just print money off it. You know, I don't know if they Stipe's been the champion a while, so he'd certainly have some kind of claim to an immediate rematch if he did lose. But, you know, I think as far as the UFC and with Jones and Ngannou already going back and forth at each other on Twitter and stuff, I think that's kind of what they're hoping for is their end game here.
Yeah, that's definitely options for the UFC because you could run back a trilogy here. Stipe certainly earned it. And then you got John Jones waiting in the wing. That'll be an interesting show when we have to break that down because, you know, I think Ngannou's been listed as a slight favorite for a while and some sites that are doing futures, but I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here. We're both picking Ngannou. It's a good DFS play, I think, because you're counting on that stoppage, that big stoppage bonus, maybe even the gone in 60-second stoppage, but I wouldn't really rely on that here because Stipe's pretty savvy guy here. For me, a stack's out of play because this is either Ngannou getting the quick win and Stipe not scoring much of anything, or Stipe getting a grinding control timey win and Ngannou not getting much. So the stack's really out for me. I think it'll be heavy Ngannou exposure for me because 8,400 is about the cheapest you're ever going to get him. Even, you know, I guess unless they fight Bones and, you know, maybe that'll get closer to a pick 'em. So I'll take Ngannou at the 8,400, you know, compared to what you're going to pay for some of these other favorites.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's the cheapest you're probably, if he wins, it's certainly the cheapest you're going to see in a while. I don't even think he would be this cheap if he fought Jones. I just think the size difference would play a factor. So, look, if you want to get a piece of him, this is probably the most reasonable price you're going to get him at for a while.
Yeah, minus 120 if you look at his odds history. He was even a bigger favorite against Stipe the first time they fought. So,
yeah.
All right, so I think we got the full picture painted here. Let's remember here that Brian Ortega, Alexander Volkanovski, that was supposed to be the co-main. Of course, that fight is off. So elevated to the co-main event, we have Tyron Woodley and Vicente Luque. Luque a minus 255 favorite for this fight. Woodley's comeback is plus 215. The salaries, of course, reflect that 9,100 for Luque, 7,100 for Woodley. So Woodley actually one of the cheaper fighters on, you know, on pretty much the whole card here. And the odds of finish plus 115, you know, that'll probably hover around a pick and we'll see what happens here. But I mean, really for me, this comes down to, you know, Woodley's faced some tough people lately and he continues to get beat by them. But do you believe Tyron Woodley is washed at this point?
He looks washed. It's not so much that the losses, it's more how he's losing. Tyron Woodley is going to be 39 years old early next month. He's lost three fights in a row. Now, the fights have come against Kamaru Usman, Gilbert Burns, and Colby Covington, who are probably essentially the three best welterweights in the world at the moment. You know, maybe Leon Edwards is certainly in there, but, you know, there's certainly three of the top four. There's no doubt about that. Anybody watching Tyron Woodley fight, even a novice MMA fan who, you know, only watches, you know, four or five times a year, whatever, can watch Woodley and see he's not the same guy he was in his prime. Not even close, really. The explosiveness he had back in the day is gone. He, you know, it used to come in short bursts. Now it doesn't come at all. He's spending way, way too much time defending himself on the feet and not doing it particularly well. Woodley was always a good wrestler, but he was never really used as wrestling inside the octagon. So it's not like even in his prime that was a big part of his game plan, which is a shame because I think that's probably the area where he'd have the biggest edge over Luque is with his wrestling, but he wasn't using his wrestling in his prime, so I have a difficult time believing he's going to use it now. He looks washed. Now, he's going up against an opponent in Luque who clearly has flaws. You know, he's 12-2 in his last 14 fights, so, you know, it's hard to get on him too much. And those setbacks came against Edwards and Stephen Thompson. So the only losses he has in his past 14 fights are against top-tier guys. Luque is one of those crazy aggressive fighters on the feet. But the downfall of that is that he leaves holes for his opposition to hit him. Now, he lands 5.72 significant strikes a minute, which is an astronomically high number, and actually absorbs 5.82. Yeah. So, I mean, as much as he's landing, he's getting hit even more than he's landing, which is, you know, not a good sign.
That tells a good story, too. You might see that with a fighter with two or three fights, but Luque actually has that over a pretty big sample size, so we know what he is.
Yeah, he's not changing now. You know, last 14 fight, you know, he's been in the company a long time. And the other thing is Luque is a volume over power guy in the sense that, you know, he's more combinations and trying to land a lot like those numbers show, as opposed to a one punch knockout type artist. I'm picking Luque, and the main reason is I don't think you can pick Woodley against anybody halfway decent until he shows you something more than he's shown lately. He might be totally done. Like, if he gets routed by Luque, with the UFC in the process of, you know, trimming the fat and older fighters who are, you know, firmly in gatekeeper status. We saw Alistair Overeem and Junior Dos Santos and Yoel Romero and names like that. If Woodley gets routed by Luque, he's firmly in that area. He's done.
He and Dana haven't exactly got along either.
No, he's done in terms of possibly making a run. And I'm sure, I don't know the number. I'm sure he's making a bunch of money. You know, it just, from a business standpoint, just not going to make any sense.
Yeah,
anymore.
I mean, a former champion, exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm out on using Woodley. And to be honest, I'm not overly hot. I'd rather use Luque than Woodley only because Woodley looks done. But Luque looks overpriced to me. It's, you know, 9,100 is a lot of money. Over 9,000 is a ton of money for a guy who, look, has clear flaws. And it's not as if Tyron Woodley is smashing guys on the feet and is landing upwards of 6 significant strikes a minute like Luque eats. But, you know, there's something about it that, you know, even though I think he's going to win, there's something about the price tag about Luque that just worries me.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I'm with you on that because I'm picking Luque too. I'd be very surprised if he wasn't a unanimous selection when it comes down to staff picks. You know, I don't think there's much buy low opportunity on Woodley at the age of 39. But just because we're agreeing on a lot of selections, I want to try to make a case for Woodley here. Now, Woodley has been a pretty pure counterpuncher these days, right? I mean, that's why the second Wonderboy Thompson fight and Woodley didn't necessarily go as action-packed here as the first, because both were sitting and waiting to counterpunch here. And if anything, Luque's strategy plays into that with Woodley. I mean, Luque's going to come forward and throw with little regard for defense. And I don't know what, you know, what Woodley's left hand has at this stage of his career anymore, but there will be openings for him to land those counters. And does he have enough power left? Maybe not the first one, maybe the second or third. I mean, we saw Vicente Luque again. This is a while ago, but he got knocked around. He took his licks against Brian Barberina, and, you know, he's definitely not Tyron Woodley. So, you know, Luque gets hit enough. And what could Woodley land? Yes. And to that extent, I'm thinking, you know, if I'm doing one of the 20 max entry tournaments, I might sneak Woodley in one or two lineups because he's one of the cheaper guys on the card. He gives you a lot of lineup flexibility here. I like him probably more than Thomas Almeida, who we'll talk about next. So, yeah, maybe there's a case to be made for a little bit of exposure to Luque or to Woodley, but straight up, I think it's Luque all the way.
Yeah, and maybe it's just me. I mentioned this in my preview article, and maybe it's because they fight and fought in the same division. But I look at what's going on with Woodley here, and it just reminds me of the Johnny Hendricks situation. And it's maybe because they're both welterweights. Yeah. But
at least
just,
Woodley's making weight. You know, Hendricks
that's
could never
true.
Make the weight,
I mean,
and then had to
just,
go up.
It's just at least it's guys who looked great and like looked dominant and then just like fell off a cliff.
Yeah. Well, like, I guess Hendricks, that coincided a little bit with USADA, right?
I mean, you know, Henan Barao is another name who comes up. Yeah. Talk about that. Guys who just, they have it and then they don't. And like, there's no, you know, certainly Woodley's up there in age, but, and the competition level's been good. And, you know, he might not win fights against Burns and Usman and Covington, but you'd like to see some pushback.
Yeah,
exactly. Burns knocked him down seconds into the fight, and Woodley literally just offered nothing the rest of the way. Like, he's not offering anything, and that it's really concerning, and even more concerning when you take into account his age.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm giving it maybe like a 5% chance he lines up a counter just right. But like I said, you know, I kind of compare him to Almeida in terms of pricing, and you're going to have to make those decisions on what could be a 9-fight, maybe a 10-fight card max here. So let's get into that bantamweight matchup here. We got Sean O'Malley, the Sugar Show, is back, taking on Thomas Almeida. O'Malley, one of the larger favorites here, minus 320. Comeback on Almeida, plus 260. DraftKings, O'Malley a little bit more expensive than Luque at 9,200, where Almeida is 7,000. I believe that makes him the cheapest fighter on the card. So yeah, Thomas Almeida and Tyron Woodley, two guys that were definitely once big names, are now the two cheapest fighters on the entire card. So that kind of tells you something about how these have gone lately here. Odds to finish on this one, minus 185. So Vegas likes the judges to not get involved here. You know, I mentioned that first round finish prop, O'Malley plus 270, which is only 20 off of Francis Ngannou. So that tells you a lot here. I mean, should Sean O'Malley be as big of a favorite as he is here, John?
Yeah, probably. He might actually deserve to be more of a favorite. And a large part of it is just from a stylistic standpoint. I'm fairly shocked Thomas Almeida is getting another shot here with the company. I believe back in the day, Dana White called him a future UFC champion. He might have even like had him take pictures with the belt in his glasses, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong. But yeah, Almeida's lost 3 in a row and 4 of his last 5. He'll turn 30 years coming up. He's going to be 30 years old soon.
I mean, his last win, I'll just throw this out here. His last win was November 2016 against Albert Morales, who has been fighting under a promotion now called Lights Out Extreme. So there's some context here to the last time Almeida saw any success.
Right. So Almeida's issue is essentially the same as Luque's, except Almeida takes it to the 10th degree. Almeida is just, and he has some power in his hands. He's just stupidly, ridiculously aggressive. No fight IQ, no sense of when to push forward, when to pull back.
He loves the flying stuff. The flying stuff is crazy. It reminds me of maybe a smaller Diego Ferreira who likes to try some of the crazy spinning stuff.
That's another word for stupid, but yeah. Yeah, he does stuff you can't do. And look, when you're fighting on the regional circuit and stuff, he'll have more talent and more ability than whoever he's fighting. And you can get away with crap like that and still win fights. But against the best the world has to offer, that's not going to work. And this looks like a horrendous matchup for him against Sean O'Malley. Yes, I know Sean O'Malley's coming off his first career loss against Marlon Vera, but anybody who watched that fight, O'Malley was crushing Vera, tuning him up, well on his way to winning before a lower leg injury essentially left him fighting on one leg, and Vera finished him off.
I took some heat on Twitter for that. Someone's saying, oh, you're just standing O'Malley here. It was the Vera leg kicks that got him, and there's a little bit of debate about that out there, so I just want to throw that out there. But I do agree more along with your side that, you know, O'Malley was kind of coasting on his way there before the injury happened.
Yeah, I'm extremely confident O'Malley would have won that fight had that not happened. Mm-hmm. The fight, you know, I'm also assuming he's fully healthy. There's no reason not to believe that. His ceiling remains massive. And Sean O'Malley is one of the most creative and technical strikers really in the sport today in any division. And on the surface, this fight doesn't seem like it makes a ton of sense. I mean, Almeida obviously doesn't have a choice. You know, he hasn't won a fight since whatever you said, 2016. Mm-hmm. So he has to take whatever he can take.
Yeah, and Dana will tee him up for the new up-and-comer here.
Right. He gets a chance to fight on pay-per-view. And, you know, O'Malley gets a fight. You know, he certainly should win going away. He gets a pay-per-view payday and gets some eyeballs. So, you know, it's assuming O'Malley comes through, it's essentially a win-win for everybody. But like I mentioned, stylistically, this seems like a disaster for Almeida. This fight is almost certainly contested on the feet the entire time. And there are very few bantamweights on the roster I'd pick over O'Malley in a kickboxing match. Mm-hmm. He's technically sound, and on top of that, he's creative. And he can do things in there guys can't do. And I've seen zero evidence Almeida can change the way he fights. Now, even if you told me he could, I don't think I would pick him at this point. But a guy who rushes forward with reckless abandon all the time against a guy as creative as O'Malley, who can fire combinations and fire counter strikes and throws a ton of kicks, I don't think this fight's going to be close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the next guy that I pick to possibly beat O'Malley, and you know those fighters will come as he rises up the ranks here, but the next fighter that I pick against O'Malley on is going to be one that offers some kind of dimension of wrestling and grappling, because O'Malley, 5'11", 4-inch reach advantage over Almeida, but we've talked about this before, you know, it'll change and develop more as he gets older, but he is a little bit slight of build here, and I think someone that's very, very physical, I mean, like if you were to get maybe, I don't know, Merab Dvalishvili or someone like that, that type of fighter will be able to take him down. But Almeida threatens that aspect zero. Almeida's never had a takedown, 0% accuracy, zero takedowns per 15 minutes, never had a takedown. That's just not how he fights. And for me, that's the perfect matchup for someone like O'Malley here. So, and you know, minus 320, that's a pretty big favorite. Had he taken care of business in the Cheeto fight, had his body held up, of course, he probably wouldn't be fighting this fight. He'd be, you know, sniffing the rankings right now. But
he'd also be minus 400 easy.
Oh, I was going to say minus 600. You know, he'd be a huge, huge favorite, you know, had he not had that injury in the Cheeto Vera fight. So, I think if anything, this is a bargain for O'Malley. I think he needs to be a core piece of DraftKings lineups, especially, you know, at 9,200 when there aren't a ton of huge, huge favorites that I like here. I mean, there's the Nurmagomedov on there, so people will have that. But then you start going down the list and, you know, the fighters listed between Ngannou and Luque, I don't see any of them as like super sure things here, no matter what. So, this is a card that you probably pay up for those $9,100, $9,200 guys.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. You know, I know there are people who think, you know, Sean O'Malley's like a lock to be a bantamweight champion one day. I'm not there yet. I'm worried about the part of his game other than his striking. Like you said, he's not particularly muscular. I wonder if he'd have problems with guys who constantly threaten the takedown, but like you said, that's not Thomas Almeida.
Yeah, I mean, the UFC will never do this, but that's why I mentioned Merab Dvalishvili, because I think he'd be able to have his way with O'Malley. And once O'Malley gets up to the Aldo Garbrandt, even Corey Sandhagen and Jan levels of the division, then, you know, I think he might have a bad time. But I see once he gets kind of towards the end of this top 10, I don't know if O'Malley wins, maybe he fights someone like Dominic Cruz, or if they do that, I don't know if that makes sense. Don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but I think the moral of the story is we're feeling pretty good about the Sugar Show on Saturday.
Yeah, you know, it's like the same thing. You know, there's a reason they kept Conor McGregor away from Habib for so long. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a stylistic thing, but I don't think there's anything. This just looks like I wouldn't overthink this one at all. This looks just like a basic fight to try and get O'Malley back on track. You know, I don't think it's more than that.
All right, so two more fights on the pay-per-view card. One of them got announced, you know, super late, I mean, even today. But one that's been on there is Jamie Mularkey against Kama Worthy. Worthy is a minus 135-ish favorite. Comeback on Mularkey plus 115. Worthy 8,600 on DraftKings. We'll get to that in a second. But like I said, in that in-between, you know, when you jump, the fighters in between Ngannou and Luque, they don't do a whole lot for me on DraftKings, and maybe I'll pay the price for that. But anyway, we're the 8,600, Mularkey 7,600. Odds to finish on this one, surprisingly, minus 185 here. So is this one where maybe you can smell an upset brewing?
I think so. I mean, and look, like you just mentioned, once you get past like the first, I don't know, 2.5 fights on this card, especially now, you're going to have to make plays and use fighters you don't feel confident in. That's it's just where we're at. I mean, this wasn't a deep card to begin with. You know, you maybe thought you could use Volkanovski or Ortega, and you know, obviously you can't do that now either. So you're gonna have to make your stand somewhere here with names that you're probably not totally confident in. This to me, from a pure value standpoint, looks like a reasonable place to try and pull an upset. Jamie Mularkey, in terms of the Vegas odds, is plus 115. If that is true, and he is plus one, I mean, you know, it is true. That is the odds. But if you're plus 115, you know, I don't think you should be $1,000 cheaper than your opponent.
If any, I'm looking right now, that moved since we posted your article. He's at about plus 110 now. So that, I mean, it wouldn't be wildly out of the question to see that flip, but there's definitely some line value on Mularkey, so I think he's going to be popular in DFS, at least from kind of the poker type minds.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a value if you line up the odds and the salaries. Now, Woodley and Almeida, like I said, are both probably fighting for their jobs on Saturday. Mularkey's probably in that same boat, and he's actually might even be in the worst shape of the three heading into the night because he doesn't have a UFC win. Mm-hmm. You know, Tyron Woodley's a former champion. Thomas Almeida was one of the most hyped prospects in the organization.
Yeah.
Jay Mularkey has no background whatsoever. He's fought twice in the UFC. He dropped unanimous decisions to Brad Riddell and Fariz Ziam. I probably said that wrong. The highlight of his career was a fight in 2016 when he was knocked out to Volkanovski's by Volkanovski. So look, that's not good. On the other side, Cam Worthy, who actually made a really nice impression, came in August 2019, a very late notice replacement, knocked out Devontae Smith, submitted Luis Pena, but then came out last September and was knocked out by Otman Azatar.
Great nickname.
Very good nickname. The Death Star is an excellent nickname. And actually, it fits him perfectly. Another guy who is just straightforward, balls to the wall, you know, trying to go after the opposition. And he has power, and, you know, he can mix in an occasional submission. But like with Worthy, another guy, I wonder really how effective he's going to be if those power punches aren't landing. Like, you know, I know he has a couple submissions in his career, but he still kind of looks like a one-dimensional power puncher in terms of offense. I wrote in my preview article that I try to stay away from this fight if I could, simply because the range of outcomes appears to be really wide. I mean, now we're down to what, like nine fights, maybe eight fights. We don't even know. So
unless you're stacking fights, you're gonna have to pick six of them to pick. You know,
yeah, we don't have anything we like in terms of stacks, really. So you know, you're gonna have to do something you don't really want to do. So I ended up going with Mularkey here. You know, the main reasons was what we mentioned earlier in terms of the salaries in relation to the Vegas odds. And, you know, Worthy's 34 years old, and I just, you know, I don't think the odds of him running off any kind of streak are really high. He looks kind of one-dimensional. He looks like he has some explosiveness, but, you know, not to the point where I'd look at him and say, oh, he's going to, you know, roll through everybody. So, look, I'll take the $7,600 and hope that $1,000 savings helps me somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I'm with you on this one. A couple of our other writers are, you know, I posted AJ's betting preview, and he pretty much was able to convince me to go over to the Mularkey side here. It's funny saying that because of the expression. Anyway, if you bet Mularkey, if you use Mularkey, you're going to have to sweat 2-3 minutes pretty tough because, you know, Worthy's going to come at it, and it's going to depend if, you know, Mularkey can kind of withstand that early onslaught. But if he can, I think the tides could turn significantly in Mularkey's favorite. I could see Mularkey losing in the first round because of a striking differential situation, but then coming back and winning the rounds 2 and 3 as Worthy starts to tire out here. I mean, Mularkey lost his first two fights. He's 0-2 in the UFC, but he still has 8 combined takedowns in those losses. And then you look on Worthy's side, it's a small sample size, 3-fight sample size. His takedown defense is only 57%, and that's because Luis Pena took him down for three times there and actually threatened, you know, with submissions and stuff on the ground. So it's going to be up to Mularkey to withstand kind of that early storm. And if he can do that, I actually like him. So I like him at $7,600. I'm definitely buying the line value. It makes sense that the line has moved as it can. Is Worthy a fine GPP option if you're hunting for those knockouts? Sure. I mean, I've been talking about that Gone in 60 Second bonus, those first round finish props. Worthy is the third highest on the list after Ngannou and O'Malley at +360. So, you know, Vegas thinks there's at least a shot he can get it done in the first round. But man, if he doesn't, I would start to get real, real worried. So maybe there's a live betting opportunity in there if Mularkey can get out of the first round and still have his wits about him. Or, you know, you just take Mularkey as the underdog there. I think I would have more exposure to Mularkey than Worthy and load up on the O'Malley and the Luque, those types of fighters. So that's kind of how I play this one.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, my main concern about Mularkey is even if he survives the first round and we end up in the second round, the third round, he doesn't look like the kind of guy who's going to be able to generate a ton of offense in a short period of time. Mm-hmm. And if it's that's the case, even if he does enough in rounds 2 and 3 to take a decision, I don't know if he's going to help you a ton in terms of fantasy scoring.
Yeah. It does help with the new control time scoring DraftKings has. So that helps Mularkey's case for sure.
Yeah, maybe he can get a takedown in each round and, you know, try and keep him pinned to the mat for a while. Look, We're going to talk about Jillian Robertson and Miranda Maverick next. You know, that's where we're at here. It's just, you know, it's just not a lot of depth, and, you know, you got to figure it out somehow.
Yeah, let's jump right into that. Jillian Robertson, Miranda Maverick. Maverick is the betting favorite at minus 160, plus 140 for Robertson here. The DraftKings salaries, I believe, are Robertson is 7,400 here, whereas Maverick is 8,800. So, you know, $1,400 difference. That's quite a bit there in my eyes. We might see this one a little bit differently here, but, you know, what are your general thoughts on this one? See, Maverick only has one UFC fight. Robertson's been around a little while. Maverick seems to have a striking advantage where Robertson might be able to, if she can get her to the ground, maybe things could start going her way. I mean, is that how you generally see this?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. You know, this was supposed to take place about a month ago. Maverick Robertson had an illness that was non-COVID related, so it had to be pushed back about a month. Robertson certainly has a massive experience edge. Like you said, Robertson has 9 UFC bouts. Maverick only has 1. Robertson fights often. She fought 3 times in 2019. She fought 3 times in 2020. You know, we have fighters now who, you know, seem to fight once every 18 months, and she's fought 6 times over the last couple of years. And she's still fairly young. Actually, she's really young. She's 25 years old. So although we've seen Robertson a lot, she's still young, but she's had a real problem remaining the least bit competitive against better competition. You know, we don't know, obviously, if Maverick falls into that category. She has all 1 fight with the company. But my ultimate problem with – my biggest issue with Robertson is the complete lack of power in her hands. She has 1 career knockout, and not only does she only have 1 career knockout, it's that she's not threatening her opposition on the feet at all. Her opposition has nothing to worry about in terms of the stand-up, and it's quite clear when watching her, her entire game plan revolves around trying to get her opposition to the ground.
Mm-hmm. Maverick will definitely look to press forward here for sure.
100%. She's one of the younger fighters on the roster. She won't turn 24 until July, so she's 23 now. And Maverick's been around too, not in the UFC, but she made her pro debut back in as a 19-year-old in November 2016. The fact she has 12 pro fights under her belt at such a young age is a certain positive, certainly a positive. But, you know, we talked about how inconsistent Robertson's been, and she's still going to be by far the best opponent Maverick's seen to date. Mm-hmm. So that gives you an idea of some of the competition she's faced. And this is a real contrast in styles. Robertson is a pure submission specialist. Maverick, on the other hand, is really – I mean, obviously her sample size is small, but she has the look of just a reckless brawler. She's really, really aggressive. It's kind of the same Thomas Almeida-Vicente Luque game plan. Push forward, except she doesn't have the power of Luque or Almeida. She certainly fights physically for a woman who's only 5'3", and her technical skills are clearly lacking. But, you know, she's young, and, you know, she can certainly make up that difference. I ultimately thought Maverick's physicality and aggressiveness edge will probably be enough to win, but she seems ridiculously overpriced from a DraftKings standpoint.
Yeah.
She's 8,800. I would have said this is close to a pick'em for me. So if you want to give Maverick a little bit of an edge, that would make her – well, pick'em be 8,100 apiece, right? Mm-hmm. So if you want to say Maverick has a little bit of an edge, maybe she should be 8,200 or 8,300. She certainly shouldn't be 8,800. So even though I'm going to pick Maverick to win, I'd much rather use Robertson and hope Maverick pushes forward, gets lazy. Robertson can maybe get a trip in or something and then do something on the ground.
Yeah, pull an arm out. And honestly, like, so if the biggest knock on Robertson is the lack of power in her hands, we do have to mention that 6 of her 9 pro victories are via submission here. And Maverick, her 2 pro losses, you know, I'm going to peek at that real quick, hasn't been submitted before, but again, hasn't faced anybody the caliber of Robertson. So if you look at this as a pick'em fight, I'm leaning Robertson a little bit because I think the experience factor comes into play. But again, you have both in the player pool, at least in case Maverick manages to get, you know, a stoppage with her hands, because Robertson's only been knocked out once. And 5 losses, but give me the experience with Robertson in this one. When this fight was originally supposed to happen, I was actually on Robertson because there wasn't much for underdogs on that card. And again, you're limited in fights here, but I think I got a couple underdogs I might lean towards a little bit more. We can kind of talk about that next here when we get to the final portion of our show here, where we just kind of open the floor up here. I do want to mention William Knight, because the Alonzo Menafield fight got canceled, or he had a withdrawal, got rescheduled for a later date. William Knight is now going to take on, let's see here. He's going to take get on Fabio right. Chirant. And Knight's already out there on DraftKings at 8,100, right? Now, once these contests are launched, you can't really change his price here. So Knight's going to be 8,100, or I'm sorry, yeah, Menafield's going to be 8,100, I'm sorry, against Fabio Chirant here. And Menafield's listed as a minus 250 favorite pretty much across the board. So you want to talk about line value. You get a minus, you know, you don't know that much about Chirant, but you get a minus 250 favorite at 8,100. I think, although Menafield's definitely let me down a couple times before, I think this is a good spot for him.
It has to. I mean, Menafield and Knight, before the fight had to be rearranged, was literally the straight up pick 'em you can get. Mm-hmm. Both guys were 8,800 in DraftKings. Vegas salaries, both guys were minus 110, which tells you everybody, Vegas on the DK salaries tell you it is as close to a pick 'em as you get. They fight 10 times, both guys win 5. So from a value standpoint, no doubt about that one. Mm-hmm. If we're going underdogs, the other guy I thought was halfway decent was Abu Azaitar against Marc-Andre Barrio. I was not impressed with what I've seen out of Marc-Andre. The early returns in the UFC are not good. He is 0-3 in the company. Dropped decisions to Andrew Sanchez, Krzysztof Jatko, and Junyoung Park. That's not a murderer's row competition. He ended up with a no contest in his most recent fight over Oscar Piocha. He had a bunch of knockout wins early in his career on the regional circuit in Canada, but he's been hit too much in the UFC, and I haven't been impressed with what I'd seen. Mm-hmm. So I think Azaitar looks like a reasonable underdog play. My one concern about Abu is that he's been on the sidelines since July of 2018. Mm-hmm. He hasn't fought in almost legitimately 3 years, so that's always concerning. But look, there's not a ton here, which makes Menafield at 8,100, like you mentioned, yeah, even more appealing. Like, I even mean, if you weren't on board to begin with, the fact that your options have been dwindled, you know, so much, you almost have to get on board now.
I mean, I'm looking at, like, I would guess like 60% ownership at least, if not greater, for Menafield, given the small amount of fights. Now, if you're trying to win that 150K top prize, you know, maybe you throw Chirant in there and hope for a miracle. And, you know, then that might get you enough differentiation to consider that. But I could see huge, huge ownership for Menafield given that line value there. I'll take the line value on Malarkey as well, mix in some Robertson. I also, I'm also taking a look at Modestas Bukauskas a little bit. He's going up against Mikhail Olekshezuk. I think I got that one right. I was practicing. Olekshezuk's a minus 160 favorite. But to me, that breakdown actually, it fares similar to the Malarkey worthy one. I think Olekshezuk's going to have a good first round, you know, maybe land some shots. And if Bukauskas can outlast him, we've seen from a few of Olekshezuk's fights that the cardio starts to fade a little bit. And, you know, in the betting preview that Cole wrote on the site today, he said he liked Bukauskas for maybe a second or third round stoppage. And I can get behind his reasoning there. Bukauskas is 7,700. So maybe another option to think about here. So, I mean, geez, we almost touched on every single fight on that card, John. Hopefully we give you guys some plays to consider here on what's really a shallow card. And, you know, hear me knock on wood here, but we got to get through weigh-ins here, because otherwise there could be no prelims.
Yeah, I mean, we lost one of the underdogs I liked a little bit, Jessica Penne and Hannah Goldie. I picked Goldie to win, but I thought Penne at a 70, she was 7,900, Goldie was 8,300. Mm-hmm. I thought at a $400 discount was a reasonable price for Penne, even though she hasn't been any good. Mm-hmm. But Goldie's only fought once with the UFC. Well, so
they're going to run it back April 17th, so we'll have a chance.
Yeah, so there you go. But yeah, I thought that was – it's tough. We don't know the status of Shane Young and Omar Morales. Yeah, we're down to what, 8, maybe 9?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, 9, maybe 10. I guess. Yeah, so I guess this is as good a time to any to plug at RotoWire MMA on Twitter. Once we see news, we write it, and all of our updates get auto-tweeted. So anything relevant to DraftKings and fantasy, we're going to have you covered there. Our breaking news team does a heck of a job getting all that news pumped out for you. And, of course, John, you'll have recaps from that account on Saturday night when we talk about UFC 260. So any final thoughts on the card here before we sign off?
You know, if you're going to plan on ordering the pay-per-view, I might wait till Saturday during the day to make sure nothing happens to the main event, because if something happens to one of them, you might see this fight on ESPN Plus.
Yeah, but I mean, overall, this, as long as the heavyweights are in action.
Oh, no, that absolutely carries it.
Yeah, that makes it enough to say this one's worth buying. You know, we don't have any formal relationship with the UFC necessarily, no. So we don't have to stand by in every single card. I'd still buy this just for the heavyweights. I mean, this one does it for me.
No, the heavyweights, we talked about, you know, we got a card coming up that's going to have 3 title fights on it. This fight is bigger than anything on that card, and it's not even close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, this is one of the probably half dozen biggest fights you'll see made this year, and it's one of those legit heavyweight battles that can go either way and has a backstory behind it. You got a guy who looks like an unstoppable force against the guy who's proven time and time again that he can defeat guys who, you know, people don't think he's going to be able to beat. And you got the fact it's a rematch. So, you know, there's no doubt that the main event here has a ton going for it. Let's just knock on wood and hope it gets to Saturday.
Right on. I'm with you there. Well, hey, thanks again for listening to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. Again, ESPN Plus is the exclusive home where you can catch UFC 260 in Ngannou versus Miocic. For John Littering, I'm Jake Litarski. You can follow John on Twitter again at JonLitterine. You can give me a follow, please, at RotoJake. We're going to be back with you prior to UFC 261. That's Kamaru Usman, Jorge Masvidal 2. Until then, best of luck with the lineups, you guys, and hope to catch you next time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.